Welcome to the Flush Racing Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 2:25 PM, that is Central Time. Today is December 2nd, and we've had a pretty impressive rebound off the 100-day moving average for the S&P 500 today, and a meaningful jump in a number of other indices as well. But one thing that's clear is that we've had a strong momentum move off the lows in 2020, and it is still in play. And we've had some worries about inflation. We've had worries about the Federal Reserve's reaction to it and their willingness to accelerate the pace of the taper. We've had people worrying about the Omicron variant and what that would mean. But the hallmark of this momentum move has been the willingness of investors to look past worries to solutions. And the solution, of course, is that the Federal Reserve will be unable to raise rates, that they're not going to find themselves in a position where they can, in fact, follow through on their threats because of the size of the debt burden and the potential that in the event that they do raise rates, then you're going to have a deflationary outcome. And if you have a deflationary outcome, they'll have to cut them again. So there's no point selling now because you'd only have a rebound immediately afterwards. And it's that kind of confidence in the market that helps to sustain momentum. But what it also helps to do is to exaggerate valuations. And eventually, we're going to get to a point where it won't work anymore. But we're certainly still seeing a succession of ranges, one above another. And as long as that remains the case, then we're still in a consistent trend. And a consistent trend is a trend in motion. And therefore, as long as it's doing what it's doing, and pausing, and having these little pauses that renew, and bouncing from the region of the 100-day moving average, well then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Because right now, the 100-day moving average coincides with the region of the previous peak. It's an ideal area where we might anticipate support starting to come through, and today we saw the first evidence of that support beginning to come back in. I thought it was also particularly relevant today that the Dow Jones bounced from the region of the 200-day moving average. So it failed to sustain the breakout last month, and then came all the way back down to test the lower side of the range, and we saw a reasonably sized rally in here today. So it's the first evidence of support starting to come back in at the lower side of the range, which is the first area of potential support, and also the region of the trend mean. And then the Russell 2000 had an even more exaggerated failed upside break, also came back down to test the lower side of the range, and we started to see some evidence today of a bounce. So obviously, the lows that were put in today need to hold. And that will be the hallmark of this continued trend. And if we start to see the lows that were put in today taken out, well then we're going to be looking at a significant trend in consistency. So there's the real potential that this is the low for this reactive phase. Quite how long it takes us to get back up to new highs is another question. But it is looking, certainly it's looking more well supported right now. And then when we think about the NASDAQ 100, well, the hallmark of the NASDAQ's trend has been the ability to continue to hold a succession of ranges, one above another, and it has found support today right in the region of the previous peak. Now, when we think about what's going on in this market, there's been a lot of talk about breadth. And breadth is deteriorating. So the number of shares that are trading above their respective trend means has been falling. And that's not unexpected, because we had such a profound decline in 2020. Then we had this incredible snapback, and we got up to a point in December of last year when nearly 90% of all stocks on the NYSE were trading above their respective trend means. And the only time we've had a snapback like that was in 2009, after the depths of the pullback in 2008, then 2009 saw just about every share bounce. And of course, when the price has been falling for a while, the 200-day moving average also falls for a while. So then when you get a snapback, it can quickly see a large number of shares push back up again. So in 2010, then we had a significant pause where a large number of shares started to pull back below their respective trend means, and we got to a point where only about 30% of shares were still trading above their 200-day moving averages. And that's what this pullback in 2010 represented. So we're getting a similar condition now. And what happened then, it was that the leaders in the new cycle were the ones that were able to hold above their respective trend means. Then there were lots of companies that went into lengthy ranges and didn't do much of anything for a while. Then, of course, we had a good-sized pullback. Now let's just go back and think about what did the S&P 500 look like in 2009 and 10? Because we had a period of convalescence. So we had the big rebound, and it unwound the majority of the crash, then paused and went sideways for most of the second half of the year. And then we had a pop on the upside, and then some fears about what was going on in Europe starting to manifest in 2011. And that contributed to the pause first, then a rebound in 2011, and a more volatile trading environment overall. So now let's just put that in context that we've had sorry, this is not the S&P 500, but it's a similar condition. When we think about what happened in 2020, well, we had the enormous decline in a very short period of time. Then we had a very sharp rebound, and it has persisted because of liquidity. But the breadth in the market has deteriorated. So we also know that the dominance of the Fangman shares plus Tesla is a very significant factor in this particular advance. And they now represent about a $12 trillion market cap. But rather than looking at the figures, the trend is still intact. Apple is obviously a very major constituent of many indices, and it has a history over the course of the last year of failing to sustain upward breaks. So it is looking increasingly likely that this breakout is also failing. They announced today that they're seeing less demand for their products. Well, they announced a couple of months ago that they're having difficulty sourcing enough of chips for their products. So instead, what we're now starting to see is that supply and demand are starting to come back into balance. But of course, what that also means is that we're not going to have quite as much growth. And when you're talking about a company that's approaching a market cap in the order of trillions, and the market cap right now is nearly 2.7 trillion. So when you're talking about a market cap of that size, well then the reality is that you need growth. And it's got a price to sales ratio of 7x. So that would imply that they do nothing at all and spend no money at all, and it would still take them 7.5 years to earn back their price from sales, and that's assuming sales don't drop any further. So we're even for a company like Apple, which has got serious cash, then the reality and low debt, the reality is that they're still trading on a high multiple. So what happens in terms of those large cap companies is obviously going to have a knock-on effect for the market, but it's still the majority, and particularly on aggregate, they're still trending higher. Now, when we look at what's going on in terms of bonds, well, bond yields are still reasonably range-bound, and the yield was a little steadier today at the lower side of this range around the 1.4% level. The yield curve spread is contracting, and the 10 and 2 year spread is down to 82 basis points. So it was down another 2 basis points in here today. Generally speaking, it's the peaks in the yield curve spread represent the lows in the market. And then subsequently, as it contracts, we get bull markets. And it's not until after an inversion that we would start to see trend inconsistencies and top formation development beginning. So it's quite likely that this is the peak, and that we're not going to see the yield curve spread get all the way back up to the peaks that we saw in 2002 and after the credit crisis. So in that regard, it's probably more similar to the kind of environment that we had after the savings and loan crisis, where we don't get up to the peaks and then we mess around quite a bit, and then it's going to take a while before we get an inverted yield curve. So we're going to start to see financial conditions tightening, and we're already starting to see that. When we think about financial conditions, they've been extraordinarily lenient, and it's to be expected that financial conditions will tighten next year. So we've had a really incredible decline in this measure, and it went to a significant spike in 2020, and then went to the most easy financial conditions in I think in anyone's memory in 2021. But now it's starting to tighten up, and we're seeing a lead indicator for that in high yield spreads. And high yield spreads broke out in the last couple of weeks, and it looks increasingly likely that we're going to see this measure trend higher. Doesn't mean that it's all going to happen at once. The last time we had a substantial breakout, it took the better part of a year for the spread to get up to about 500 basis points. Right now it's only at about 330, and it might take a while to get up to those levels. Investors are willing to take, or at least they're willing to bet, that central banks aren't going to be all that eager to, in fact, rush to raise rates. And there's a good reason why. The cost of servicing, the quantity of debt contracted in 2020 because yields were so low. And as yields remain firm, well, then there's going to be a compounding element to the debt servicing costs because more debt will be refinanced at higher rates. So the higher that yield goes, the greater the impact it has on government finances. And at the same time, we're going to have tighter financial conditions next year because governments are not spending as much today as they were in 2020 or in early 2021. So there's going to be some necessary contraction in liquidity in 2022 as well. So that's going to sap some of the inflationary pressures, and it's going to feel a little deflationary. But that's normal, because we've had it just like we saw with the number of shares trading above the 200-day moving average. It comes down very fast and then it rebounds very quickly, and in fact it rebounds faster than it declines because of the base effect. So that's exactly what we've had with inflation over the course of the last year. We've had this incredible rebound off of the base effect, and then what happens is that it goes sideways, and we're going to get a bit of ebb and flow in terms of inflationary expectations. But we're in an environment where central banks are inhibited from raising interest rates, governments are inhibited from raising taxes, and populations are restive and demanding higher wages. And they're demanding better services and more attractive benefits. And nobody wants to talk about how they're going to be paid for. So a lot of people are talking about, the inflation spiral that we're having, and how high interest rates would have to go in order to combat that. But we're not in a position yet where people are going to tolerate that kind of activity. Because in order for interest rates to rise, then the global population needs to experience the negative effects of inflation for a while before they're willing to vote for administrations that will start to try and normalize policy and to set the economy back on a growth and investment footing without just spending every available penny on increasing benefits. And we're just not there yet. So gold prices, with stock markets doing better, gold was a little weaker in here today and down $13 off the low and still holding the sequence of higher reaction lows, but it really does need to bounce quick if the sequence of higher reaction lows is going to remain intact. And oil prices have been extraordinarily volatile over the course of the last week, and we started to see at least some support starting to come back in today. That looks like a substantial tail on the candle. We're in the region of the 200-day moving average, so it wouldn't be beyond the bounds of possibility at all to see some support starting to come through in this area. And we still have the broad sequence of higher reaction lows that's intact. But this has been a substantial pullback. So it's going to take time, above all else, to, I think, rebuild confidence and allow people to start to think about, well, what to expect next. Obviously, what people are looking at is what OPEC are going to do. And will they increase supply? Or will they decide that they're going to decrease supply in order to help to support the price environment? And ultimately, what they decide to do in terms of their response to the market, well, then that's going to have an influence on the price. Then, one of the other big contributors to inflationary pressures has been natural gas. And US natural gas prices have pulled back substantially, and they were down again in here today, and they've now completely unwound the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. And then, if we look at the UK natural gas price, it continues to remain firm, and it was down a tad in here today, but well off the lows. So one thing that we've also started to see is that the Baltic Dry Index has found support. It pulled back very violently in November, and now we're starting to see support starting to come back in, and it has held the breakout from the base formation. And now a sustained move below the 2000 level would be required to question the bull market hypothesis. With the big and increasingly wide differential between the US and the UK natural gas price, the argument for additional exports from North America to Europe is well made. So, if we think then about the kinds of companies that might benefit from that, Exmar in Belgium has a fleet of LNG tankers, and the share is now starting to bounce from the region of the trend mean. It's doubled in the last year, and then the dividend yield is in the region of about 7%. So that is certainly a something that it should benefit from additional exports, because it is looking increasingly likely that natural gas is going to become a globally fungible commodity, and that the build-out of export infrastructure is something that's going to rival the global trade in crude oil, I think probably well before the end of this decade. So I think that's also going to help to mitigate some of the inflationary pressures that people are worried about. Now, when we think about the dollar, well, the dollar has been consolidating over the course of the last week, but with a stronger stock market and the continued outperformance of Wall Street, well, then it's so far held the breakout. This looks like an orderly consolidation, relatively similar sized to the last one. And there's the potential here that this is only a consolidation and that we may see some additional upside. Now, if we just look at the performance of global stock markets, Wall Street and Latin America were all in positive territory today. Europe was pretty much all in negative territory. And since the rebound in Wall Street has been going on just about all day, well, this weakness in Europe is certainly being affected by the currency. But more importantly, we're in the region of the 200-day moving average on the Euro stocks. So there is certainly potential for additional upside here and a bounce following through from Wall Street. When we think about Australia, Australia's trade surplus is still close to record highs, and the ASX is right in the region of the 200-day moving average and the lows from back in September. So it's an ideal location for support to start to come back in. And then we have the Nikkei, which has been pulling back rather sharply over the last 2 weeks, and it's right in the region of the lower side of the range. And the second section had broken back below the 200-day moving average. But if Wall Street starts to firm, then that should lend some support. And of course, the big question for Japan is what happens with the currency? And the yen, having strengthened over much of the last week, is now starting to weaken again, or at least the dollar is firming from the lower side of this range. The wild card for the global economy remains China. And the CSI 300 hasn't been doing anything for most of the last 4 months. But there's a developing triangular pattern where we have incrementally higher reaction lows and incrementally lower rally highs. So ultimately, this evolving pattern is going to be resolved, and potentially with a significant breakout in one direction or another. And we can think about some of the commodities offering a window into the real health of the economy. So the significant decline that we saw in iron ore futures in the second half of this year, that was certainly reflective of the closing down of some of the most polluting steel production facilities. And they may not open back up. And that's contributed to a significant decline again following the rebound that we saw in October. Then the price is starting to steady again from the region of the peaks back in 2019. So with every other commodity, we've seen big breakouts and a big pullback, and subsequently the breakouts have held. So it's quite likely that iron ore prices aren't going to fall much further, and that should be beneficial for companies like Rio Tinto, where the price has come back into the region of the peaks from back in 2019 and 2020, and it's beginning to steady. But the other big point, of course, is that the last big commodity bull market was about iron ore, and it was about massive steel production in China to build the infrastructure necessary to modernize their economy. And on this occasion, it's not quite the same argument. Obviously, places like India and much of Africa are going to need infrastructure, but it's much more about copper and lithium on this in this particular bull market, because it's about renewable energy infrastructure. So we've had a lot of volatility in copper prices, but they are still continuing to hold the region of the 200-day moving average. And this continues to look like a consolidation overall. And ultimately, it's likely that we're going to have additional demand come through for copper because whole new use cases have been created. So it is still a supply inelasticity meets rising demand environment overall. So Southern Copper has, hold on, I have That's the wrong ticker. Southern Copper rebounded last week following better than anticipated outcomes from the political volatility we have in Peru. But the share price is still in the region of the lows from back in October. So it does need to rebound, and it's unlikely to continue lower if copper prices continue to bounce. So it's likely that it's the copper producers and the lithium producers are going to become the more interesting resources plays in this bull market, because it's no longer an argument about the global demand for steel, and rather the global demand for renewable energy infrastructure. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.